This program deals with things of an adult nature and is intended for a mature audience.
The very word secrecy is repugnant in a free and open society. And we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings.
Our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world.
We must guard against the military-industrial complex.
Exopolitics, paranormal phenomena, and deep analysis of current world events from somewhere in the desert between Area 51 and Roswell, blasting across the planet, the Manticore Network proudly presents Fairy Tales, because the truth will set you free.
Headline edition, July 8, 1947. The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty!
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Sooner or later, though, you always have to wake up.
Be skeptical, but don't close your mind.
Greetings to everyone around the world, and a warm welcome to another edition of Veritas at veritasradio.com. I'm your host, Mel Fabregas, and I sincerely thank you for joining me once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home. I want to thank you, Veritas member, for making this program possible. Tonight's special guest is Veritas veteran, retired Army Sergeant Clifford Stoud. We'll discuss his life and experiences as a member of a military UFO crash retrieval team and his interaction with extraterrestrial biological entities. This is actually a video interview recorded at the 2012 International UFO Congress. To watch it in high-quality video, go to the Veritas TV link. Clifford Stone will be with us shortly. To watch this interview on video or listen to segment 2 and every interview, audio or video, it's time to subscribe and get it all. Just go to veritasradio.com and subscribe. You'll receive your login immediately. And visit our Veritas store where you can find MMS, our 8GB USB drives with seasons 1, 2, or 3, and much more. And if you want to contact me, just click on the contact button of our website at veritasradio.com. And tonight's interview was recorded outside our studio. Sergeant Clifford Stone has already been on this show, and I highly recommend his first interview, which you can find in the past show's link for 2009. First, we'll listen to Sergeant Stone's speech at the May 2001 Disclosure Project event at the National Press Club in Washington, D.C.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name's Clifford Stone. I was a Sergeant First Class, United States Army. I had a secret clearance with Nuclear Assurity. I could get the clearance that I needed to do whatever it was that was necessary for me to do at the time on special operations when I was called in on those. What I'm referring to here is that I was involved in situations where we actually did recoveries of crashed saucers, for lack of a better term, debris thereof. There were bodies that were involved with some of these crashes, also some were alive. While we were doing all this, we were telling the American public there was nothing to it. We were telling the world there was nothing to it. I'd like to go into detail on some of the cases about the nuts and bolts cases right here, but I will be available if you have any questions concerning my involvement in this. You can talk to Dr. Greer to arrange for me to get to talk to you. But the whole situation is, we've set back, we've told the American people that there's no such thing as UFOs. I've been involved where we have recovered these objects, we know them to be of extraterrestrials. In 1969, I had an event that happened to me while I was stationed at Fort Lee, Virginia. We went to Indiantown Gap, Pennsylvania. That would be my first exposure to any time that we would be recovering an unidentified flying object. When we went there, we already had people that was already in the facility. We were a backup team, which was supposed to be NBC because there was supposed to be some nuclear materials that was on board this craft. Later on, most people involved were to be told that there was nothing on board it. It was nothing more than just a crash of one of our aircraft. I know better, because I was one of the people that approached it with a Geiger counter to get surface readings. I was the first person to go ahead and see that there were bodies on it. That would be the first of approximately 12 events. UFO crashes are not events that take place every day. They're rare. I know we're not alone in the universe. I know that the absence of evidence is not evidence of absence. It's evidence that has been denied to the American people. I stand before you today in my almighty God, and I tell you this. If Congress calls me in and says, will you testify in detail what you know, I stand here today prepared and ready to do just that. Governments must never lie to the people for no reason. Thank you.
Hello, this is Mel Fabregas with Veritas, and I'm privileged and honored to be here with Sergeant Clifford Stone, Army retired. You may remember him from our interview back in 2009, a most excellent interview. So if you don't know who Sergeant Stone is, please go back to that interview to see the background. We'll speak a little bit of it, but I highly recommend it. But first, welcome Clifford, and tell us a little bit about who you are, for those who may not be familiar with you.
My name's Clifford Stone. I retired in the U.S. Army as a Sergeant First Class. During my 10-year service, which was 22 and a half years from time to time, I'd be called in to assist with UFO cases, such as UFO crash retrievals, and also would be doing interfacing with the ETs that we'd become involved with in those crashes.
For those people who listen to the words crash retrieval, this might be new to some of them, but this is a very exciting career that you had back then. First of all, you mentioned at one point that there were X number of extraterrestrial races when you left the military. Has that changed in your opinion?
It possibly could have, but the time I got out, they had 57 that they'd cataloged. The reason there was a need to catalog those species and us have it in the field was so we would know what to do as first responders should any of the ETs be injured. First aid that we'd use on normal humans wouldn't always work for them. They had specific type of first aid that would have to be utilized to take care of them until the medical teams arrived on scene, if there was a need for a medical team.
Who was responsible for cataloging these races?
I'm not sure who it was that was responsible for doing that, but I assume that it would be within the medical command of the military to go ahead and do that, or the medical command of the intelligence community to ensure that it was cataloged.
Did you ever have any exposure to any of those reports, and did you see some of those ET races and their specifics?
Well, the book that I'm talking about, I saw that. I actually held that and got to go over it. But I could never keep a copy. And I only had exposure to it on several occasions. And that was by haphazard. Because I didn't really have a need to know that information. But there were some people there who befriended me who let me see it.
Can you comment, if you recall, some of the information that you read about?
Well, some of the information dealt with, like I say, the first aid, and that was the primary reason that they were concerned about what we'd call first responders. Like, you could not use iodine to put on some cuts that they may have. You would have some special prepared compounds that you would use to put on those. And they would have those tagged and cataloged as to the various medications that you would use. You'd have for, I'm calling it this, it's not what they called it, an ET first aid kit. That would be marked in accordance with that manual. So you would know if this is the species, this is the material you'd have to use. Stuff that we would do would actually go ahead and cause the injuries to be worse and sometimes even cause the entity to die.
I'm trying to understand if planet Earth is such a unique place where we have oxygen and we breathe the oxygen, but in turn that could be poisonous to an extraterrestrial race that I presume may breathe something different. So wouldn't the fact that they may crash here render them dead immediately because they can't breathe unless they have their own survival mechanism as we would if we were going to another planet?
Or they have a means to go ahead and adapt themselves to breathing our air for a short period of time. And they do have that. And some of them have to use suits. So you have to be very careful if you decide to go ahead and, say, remove, for lack of a better term, the helmet of the spacesuit they have on.
Because can you mention some of the... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Finish the mere exposure to our air could actually kill them. But they had means to go ahead and adapt themselves for short periods of time. The oxygen as we breathed it isn't necessarily the way they would take in oxygen. Also, their primary gas that they would use in their atmosphere may be different than ours, and that would also create problems. But the only yardstick we have is a carbon-based life form. We now know of an arsenic-based life form that can go ahead and survive on arsenic. But there are other forms of life out there that can, for example, silicon is one of the basic life structures in some of the life forms that visit us. And some of them are just pure energy.
I'm just curious to know, from that book that you had an opportunity to read, could you mention what information? Did they have a picture of the ET rays? And what columns and what information did you see on the titles?
They would have pictures, and some of them would just be the artist's concept. Mm. And they would go ahead and break them down by, like, well, everybody knows about the gray, so I guess I can use that. Like gray type 1, gray type 2, gray type 3. Now when you get into gray type 4, you have gray type 4A, gray type 4B. But I believe, I'm trying to call from memory here, there was about 8 different types of grays. The 3 that we primarily dealt with, primarily, was the first 3, type 1 through 3.
And column-wise, you're talking about the titles of each specific race, but did they show color?
Some of the pictures were black and white. Some of the pictures were in color. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the artist's conception, those were always in color.
But I'm referring to what attributes they had, average size, weight.
That would range.
Dangerous, benevolent, that kind of thing.
Nothing about whether they were friendly or foe.
Right.
Nothing about that type of category. We were always advised that not all encounters would be friendly.
Right.
And that goes back to the rogue element, not necessarily the actual species. But they would have the average weight, average height, because these would vary, just as it varies with us. Like the gray type 2, average size 3 to 3.5 foot tall. Now it would vary. Not all of them would be 3 foot tall. Some would even be smaller. Not much smaller, but smaller. some would be taller than 3.5 feet, not a whole lot taller, but would be taller. They'd put the averages in there. For the type 3 gray, the average pound would, or type 2 gray, I'm trying to remember this from recollection, so I could be wrong, but I think it was about 80 pounds. They would go ahead, of course, the picture spoke for itself, but they describe it as normally a very slender body with slender long arms, slender, shorter legs. They would describe that these entities could have fingers from 3 to 5 fingers and an opposable thumb.
And did they, in what other categories, did it show planet of origin?
I'm quite sure the planet of origin was there. But when I got to see it, I didn't get to go through it or study it. But I'm quite sure that they named the locations from which they came from. But it was very limited in information. The primary reason, once again, was for us to use it as a first responder book. It wasn't a know-all book. It was very limited in information as it applied to the medical care of the entities that we could possibly come in contact with.
How did we, and I presume that these entities are more advanced than us in many ways if they're able to come from point A to point B, meaning planet Earth, and we can't do that. Now, who's teaching us to take care of them medically?
I can't answer that question. I wouldn't know.
Okay.
But apparently there was some means of gathering that information. And the one thing I'd want to point out is that a crash is very, very unusual. For a UFO to land and one or more of the entities be left behind because we know there's a landing there and we respond to that landing, or one goes down because they're having mechanical problems and one or more get left behind as a result of us showing up on scene before they could get back to the craft. Now that also creates a medical emergency for them because we are going to search for them and we may have to render first aid because it's not going to be one of those situations where they want us to come into possession of them.
Good point. And you had a story to share during our last interview that I would like to repeat if you could. After you went through your training, at one point you were told, we have a gray extraterrestrial, he or EBE, who would like you to sit down and speak with him. Can you tell us once again that story?
Okay. Try to go by it real fast, and you know why. We went ahead, and we got a gray. He was at a building. It was a wood building. The location's in Virginia. I'm not sure where at in Virginia. But it was a one-level wooden building. And they told me that we had one of our visitors here. He was a guest. And that they wanted me to do the interfacing with the ET that we had. So I went there, and as soon as I got there, they went ahead and took me into this room. There were several people in the room, and the guy mentioned something about I was the interfacer and I'd be trying to communicate with the entity we had there. The entity looked up at me, and, you know, I remembered, I'm afraid. I mean, I picked up, but I could feel the fear. I mean, you could feel anything they felt. They were coming to get him. And the one thing that he didn't want was for them to come there because the means that they would use to extract him from there could possibly cause the death of some of the people there. So I went ahead and told the person I always called, the colonel, that he wanted to tell me something.
Thank you for listening. To unlock the full 2-hour interview, including video formats, downloads, transcripts, exclusive articles, and more, subscribe to Veritas Plus now. Gain access to our entire archive dating back to 2008. Just click subscribe at veritasproject.com. To listen to the rest and access all of our exclusive material, head over to the Veritas Plus member section or click the subscribe button at veritasproject.com. Don't forget to visit the Veritas store for a range of great products, including focused life force energy. Experience the benefits with a 15-day free trial of FLFE today. No credit card required. If you'd like to get in touch with me, be a guest on the program, have a guest suggestion, or want to provide feedback, just click the contact button on our website at veritasproject.com. Thank you for listening to The Veritas Project, because you don't want to believe, you want to know. What are you waiting for? Subscribe now at veritasproject.com.